Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 262, titled Dracula for President, an update on Eurofascism. This is being recorded on November 26th of the year 2000. The title comes from an interesting quote from a supporter of the Greater Romania Party. This is a neo-fascist party in Romania that appears to be realizing a political reality that a number of the former Soviet bloc countries have engendered or have realized to a certain extent, namely a red-brown alliance, an alliance between neo-fascists or in some cases old-line fascists and some of the hard-line communists or former communists in some of those countries. I would note that the political rhetoric and the political traditions to which Cornelio Vadim Tudor, the leader of the Great Romanian Party, is referring, or basically his the political traditions that have serve as the foundation for his current political activities, are the Iron Guard of Romania, the fascist party allied with Hitler during World War II. We've talked about the Iron Guard in a number of different broadcasts, and to a certain extent, the Iron Guard political rhetoric is finding a new and more receptive audience in Romania. Like many of the former Soviet bloc countries, Romania has been in pretty tough shape since the end of the Cold War, and the tough social conditions are in turn engendering a lot of political bitterness. The Financial Times of Friday, November 24th of the year 2000, reported on the growth and relative success of the Greater Romania Party, again to a certain extent hearkening back to the traditions of the Iron Guard. This article is by Feli McAleer in Bucharest. It's headlined, Greater Romania Rhetoric Finds a Ready Audience. It reads in part as follows. It was standing room only at Ploiești Trade Union House, 60 kilometers north of Bucharest, at an election rally last weekend for Cornelio Vadim Tudor, leader of the Great Romanian Party. In a country disillusioned with politicians, Mr. Tudor's entrance was striking. Several people in the 2,000-seat hall were crushed as he was mobbed by the excited crowd. On stage, he gave a vintage Tudor performance, high on rhetoric but low on policy details. Quote, Romanians are a beautiful messianic people who have never before experienced such degradation, unquote, he told the crowd to loud applause. To even louder cheers, he promised a war against corruption and pledged that those who had lost money in recent banking collapses would be repaid by Christmas. The 51-year-old Mr. Tudor has come far since he was the official poet recording the dubious achievements of Elena Ceausescu, hated wife of the former communist dictator. Under democracy, he has emerged as leader of the Great Romania Party, whose name recalls the larger Romania of pre-1939 and was once considered an entertaining but embarrassing sideshow in Romanian politics. He peppered his clowning with calls for the reconquering of the former Romanian provinces, which are now the Republic of Moldova, and launched bitter attacks on minorities including Hungarians, Gypsies, and Jews. One thing that's ironic is that in neighboring Hungary, which also has a Romanian minority, the elements that are rising from the ashes of the old Arrow Cross fascists in Hungary, the fascist party allied with Hitler in World War II in Hungary, are basing their political agenda to a certain extent and their political rhetoric on attack against Gypsies, Jews, and Romanians, just as the Romanian fascists or neo-fascists are to a certain extent basing their attacks on Gypsies, Jews, and Hungarians. Skipping down in this article, one of the supporters of Corneliu Tudor described her support for him as follows. Another supporter, Constanta Avram, 61, who lost her life savings of $3,000 when the country's largest investment fund collapsed during the summer, said Mr. Tudor was following in the footsteps of Vlad the Impaler Tepes, T-E-P-E-S, the 15th-century Romanian prince who inspired the Dracula legend and who impaled criminals for minor infringements. Quote, We need an iron hand to take us out of the hole we are in. We need a person like Vadim to make order just like Vlad Tepes, unquote, she said. So this person is longing for an iron hand, and it's understandable why the chaos in that part of the world is seeking people to, or sending people in search of totalitarian solutions. She's looking for an iron hand. Bear in mind that the political rhetoric and to a certain extent the political agenda, at least ostensibly, of Cornelio Vadim Tudor is that of the Iron Guard of the fascist period. One of the areas that we have been tracking neo-fascism in Europe is in Italy, where Silvio Berlusconi, the Italian media magnate who was a member of the fascist P2 Lodge under Licio Gelli, was part of a brief-lived coalition government with the AN, the Alleanza Nazionale, the Italian fascist party that is a direct successor to Mussolini's fascisti. The AN is still a coalition partner of Berlusconi, or will be if he gets elected. Berlusconi, who has been softening his media image with his own media empire, is in a lead, has a strong lead in the polls at the present time. And some of the officials of the Alleanza Nazionale have been pressing for a revision of Italian school books and Italian history texts to reflect a more positive image of fascism. And that should certainly send people who think that, well, fascism is a dead entity, or who otherwise dismiss some of the arguments I present on this program, that should send people to reflecting rather seriously. The pro-fascist would-be revisionism of Italian school textbooks by Berlusconi supporters was reported on in the Financial Times of Friday, November 17th of the year 2000. This is an article by James Blitz. It's headlined, Berlusconi Tries to Keep His Wilder Allies in Check. And it reads, and it's subtitled, The Forza Italia leader with a strong lead in the polls is trying to project a moderate image. Italy's center-left government faces a tough struggle over the next few months if it is to have any chance of defeating Silvio Berlusconi's center-right coalition in the next spring's general election. But the government has this week gained a much-needed psychological boost after one of Mr. Berlusconi's far-right allies triggered a political storm by calling for the revision of school history books on ideological grounds. The row started when the ruling council of the region of Lazio, of which Rome is a capital, agreed to a proposal regarding the content of history textbooks used in local schools. Lazio's council, run by Francesco Storaci, a leading figure in the far-right National Alliance Party, or AN, said it would set up a commission to, quote, review, unquote, the political content of these books, exposing mistakes and false arguments, unquote. Mr. Storaci, S-T-O-R-A-C-E, and his allies said the books glorify the role played by anti-fascist partisans in the Second World War, without taking sufficient account of the murder of Italians by Yugoslav communists in the northeast of Italy. They also complained, among other things, that the books give an unfairly negative assessment of Mr. Berlusconi's short-lived premiership in 1994. The ruling drew immediate condemnation from ministers who warned that a center-right government would return Italy to the kind of propaganda and censorship last seen under former dictator Benito Mussolini. So, indeed, the AN and Silvio Berlusconi attempting to project a more moderate image, but some members of that political alliance are not nearly as PR-oriented as the Berlusconi people would like, and they're showing their true fascist roots. Next, we're going to turn to the Searchlight magazine. Specifically, we're going to turn to the Searchlight's issue number 305, number 2000. The Searchlight is a British anti-fascist publication, not to be confused with the American Spotlight, its opposite ideological number, although they have very similar titles. This article is called Germany Comment. It's by Graham Atkinson, and it deals with the underreporting of racist murder in Germany. Before that, it talks about a poll which indicated a significant rise in anti-Semitism among young former East Germans, and one of the things that's interesting about this particular poll is that it indicates anti-Semitic views among young people whose parents do not hold such views, indicating that their viewpoints have been strongly influenced by approximate political or media elements in their immediate environment. In this particular article, we read, again from the Searchlight, number 305, November of 2000, Graham Atkinson's Germany Comment. As if this were not enough, a survey on anti-Semitism among young people revealed that in Brandenburg in eastern Germany, quote, 1 in 10 young people possesses quite definite anti-Jewish views, unquote, compared with only 4% in the West German state of Nordrhein-Westfalen. In Brandenburg, 76% of young males and 50% of young women, quote, could not imagine having Jewish friends, unquote. The researchers found that the majority of the young people with anti-Semitic views in Brandenburg have parents who do not share these prejudices. The survey's coordinator, Ronald Freitag, commented that, quote, anti-Semitism is on its way to becoming the majority opinion in Brandenburg. And of the underreporting of racist attacks in Germany by the authorities, calls by politicians for civil courage amount to very little when, as soon as anti-fascists demonstrate this quality by going into the streets to combat the Nazis, they find themselves under arrest. It is also unhelpful when the authorities play down the seriousness of the situation by energetically massaging statistics of violence in order to disappear them from the public record. German MP Ulla Jelpke, J-E-L-P-K-E, has exposed the extent to which the figures are being doctored by pointing out that in a booklet published by the Internal Secret Service, quote, more than 4,000 violent crimes by right-wing extremists vanished without trace, unquote. The Internal Security Service explained this away by claiming that the method of calculation had been, quote, refined, unquote, after 1997. But new figures released in October hinted at the grim reality. They indicated that 1,112 far-right crimes were reported in August, almost double the number for July. Last year, right-wing extremists committed no fewer than 10,037 crimes, not all of them violent. The figures for this year look set to equal or even exceed these. And what we're going to do for much of the rest of the program is to read another article here, authored by Graham Atkinson. This is called A Decade of Death, Graham Atkinson on Nazi Murders Since Unification. And this is part of the Germany Report. And this has a year-by-year breakdown of Nazi killings in Germany since reunification. German reunification took place on October 3rd of 1990. And I'm going to read this list, skipping the cities in which they occurred simply due to the limitations of time. October 7th, and this is in the first, the list begins with 1990. October 7th, Lubenau. Polish worker Andrzej Fraczak was stabbed by three young racists in a discotheque. October 21st, a 23-year-old basketball fan, Eberhard Arnold, was hit by a petrol bomb hurled by Nazi skins and then pushed in flames onto a railway line. November 24th, 50 Nazis found Amadeo Antonio Kiowa from Angola in the only pub in the city still serving black people and beat him to death. December 11th, three skinheads brutally drove Klaus-Dieter Rhein, 24, to his death by forcing him to jump from a 10th-floor window. December 28th, Kurdish refugee Nihat Yusufoglu, 17, was stabbed to death by Nazi skinheads. December 31st, Bundeswehr conscript Alexander Selchow, 21, was stabbed to death by members of the Nazi FAP. December 31st, Flensburg. A drunken skinhead kicked and beat a 31-year-old homeless man who died 6 days later in the hospital. February 24th, and that's next is 1991. February 24th, an Afghan refugee died from injuries sustained in a fascist raid on his refugee hostel. April 6th, Jorge Gomondi, a 28-year-old Angolan, died after a beating by Nazi skinheads. June 1st, Nazi skinheads hurled a 35-year-old man out of a moving tram. June 4th, Nazis stabbed and murdered Helmut Leia, a 39-year-old homeless man. June 16th, a 34-year-old Angolan, Agostino Comboio, was stabbed to death by a member of the Nazi Deutsche Volksunion security squad. September 19th, Ghanaian refugee Samuel Yeboah, 27, was burned to death in a Nazi firebombing. October 20th, Mete Eksi, a 19-year-old Turkish student, was beaten so heavily by racists armed with baseball bats that he died on November 12th. December 4th, 30-year-old Gerd Himstad died after being attacked by fascist youths. December 10th, a Romanian asylum seeker died after a gang of 10 Nazis smashed his skull. December 14th, a 29-year-old German, Timo Kalki, was shot and burned alive by the Nazi Werwolf Jadenheinite Senfenberg, and I may be mispronouncing that name. 1992, January 11th. A resident in a refugee hostel was so badly beaten by a right-wing extremist Bundeswehr soldier that he died of his injuries the next day. January 31st. Three Sri Lankan refugees burned to death in a racist arson attack. March 4th. Matthias Naba, a 23-year-old German, died from severe brain damage sustained 10 months earlier when 15 skinheads chased him onto a motorway and a car hit him. March 6th, 10 Nazi boneheads stabbed a Turkish man to death in a discotheque near Mannheim. March 15th, 25 racist youths invaded a hostel for refugees and beat Romanian Dragomir Cristinel, 18, to death. March 18th, German Sea Captain Gustav Schneeklaus, 53, was beaten to death by a Nazi because he said Hitler was a big criminal, unquote. March 19th, a 31-year-old homeless German, Ingo Fenern, was kicked unconscious by a Nazi skinhead and thrown into the harbor where he drowned. April 4th, a German was killed in an attack on a refugee center. April 25th, a Nazi Deutsche Volksunion supporter murdered Nguyen Van Thu, a 29-year-old Vietnamese. May 9th, 60 Nazis armed with a variety of weapons stormed a birthday party while police looked on. They smashed the skull of a 23-year-old German, Torsten Lamprecht, who died 2 days later from severe head injuries. July 1st, Nazis kicked and knifed to death a 50-year-old homeless German, Emil Wendland. July 5th, German vigilantes cold-bloodedly executed two still unnamed people illegally crossing the frontier near the Polish border. July 8th, masked Nazis beat Yugoslav worker Sadri Berisha, 56, to death after listening to a recording of speeches by Adolf Hitler. August 1st, a 17-year-old fascist stabbed a homeless German, Klaus-Dieter Klein, 49, to death. August 3rd, Polish farm worker Ineusz Siderski, 24, was beaten to death by Nazi skinheads employed as disco bouncers. August 24th, a 23-year-old Nazi let loose with a high-caliber pistol and shot Frank Bönisch, 25, a homeless German, to death. August 29th, Nazis, including a known Ku Klux Klan supporter, beat vagrant Günter Schwanecke, 58, to death. October 11th, barmaid Waltraud Scheffler was beaten to death after trying to stop skinheads from shouting Sieg Heil. October 19th, a 37-year-old Peruvian was stabbed by racists near the fashionable Kurfürstendamm. November 7th, Nazis beat and burned alive Rolf Schulze, a 51-year-old homeless German. November 13th, a German butcher, Karl-Heinz Rohn, 53, was beaten to death, burned, and dumped across the Dutch frontier by Nazis because they, quote, thought he was a Jew, unquote. November 21st, Nazi skin stabbed 27-year-old anti-fascist Silvio Meyer to death. November 23rd, three Turkish people were burned alive in an inferno when supporters of the Nazi NPD hurled a petrol bomb into their home. December 6th, a Croatian worker was killed in a racist arson attack on his family home. December 15th, Nazis kicked to death an almost blind and mentally handicapped 57-year-old Bruno Coppi. December 17th, a Nazi shot dead a 35-year-old Egyptian in a racist attack. December 18th, two skinheads beat to death a 51-year-old machinist, Hans-Jochen Lamach. December 27th, Sahin Kalazir, 20, died after a racist rammed his car on the A57 motorway. And then in 1993, the list reads as follows. January 18th, fascists attacked a 45-year-old German park keeper, Karl Sedun, and beat him senseless and dumped his body at a busy crossroads. January 23rd, a punk was murdered by a right-wing heavy metal music fan. January 23rd, two homeless Germans were burned to death in an arson attack. February 3rd, Nazis beat, strangled, and hanged Olaf Heidenbluth, a young anti-Nazi, in his flat. February 22nd, a refugee from Zaire was found on a railway track. Indications are that he was hurled out of a moving train. February 26th, an anti-fascist rock group van driver, Mike Zerna, 22, was crushed to death when fascists overturned a vehicle on him. March 10th, a member of the fascist Republikaner beat a 56-year-old Turkish prisoner, Mustafa Demirel, to the ground and threatened to shoot him point-blank with a gas pistol. The victim was so frightened that he died from a heart attack. March 12th, a Nazi skinhead stabbed to death Hans-Peter Zarsa, 18, in a row over a motorbike. April 25th, a young conscript, Matthias Luders, 23, was beaten to death in a discotheque by 50 armed Nazis led by Thomas Hanke, the local Nazi leader in Halle. May 8th, a 23-year-old Russian soldier was stabbed to death in broad daylight. May 20th, a firebomb attack on a mixed German-Turkish home killed a German resident. News of the murder was withheld for over a week because of a meeting of the right-wing nationalist Coburger Convent was taking place in the city. May 21st, a 20-year-old Bundeswehr conscript was beaten by skinheads with baseball bats and later died at home from severe head injuries. May 26th, three Eritrean children were burned alive in an arson attack. May 29th, five Turkish women burned to death in a Nazi firebomb attack. June 5th, two young fascists tortured to death Horst Hennersdorf, a 37-year-old homeless man. June 10th, a Mozambican worker was burned to death in an arson attack on a hostel for foreign workers. June 17th, Two Nazis shot dead a Kurdish man at a refugee hostel. July 28th. Jobless Hans-Jörg Jacobsen, 35, was savagely assaulted and died after being hurled out of a moving train by three Nazi skinheads. December 7th. A racist stabbed to death Kolong Jamba, a 19-year-old Gambian refugee, on an express train from Hamburg. And then in 1994, May 28th, six skinheads beat a neighbor in their apartment block to death after a quarrel. July 23rd, four Nazi skinheads repeatedly raped Beata Fischer, 32, before murdering her. July 26th, a Polish construction worker, Jan W., 45, drowned after racists forced him into the River Spree. August 6th, cyclist Gunter Moxveerd, 42, was beaten to death by four skinheads. November 6th, an extreme right-wing Bundeswehr recruit armed with an 8-centimeter dagger stabbed 18-year-old Piotr Kania to death. The assailant had been active in the Rostock pogrom a year earlier. November 20th, a 17-year-old fascist knifed to death Michael Gobler, 18. February 5th, seven Nazis severely beat and knifed to death Horst Pulter, a 65-year-old vagrant. May 25th, soldier Peter T., 24, was attacked by a racist gang that had earlier attacked a Pakistani. He died of severe head injuries 9 days later. September 7th, two Nazi skinheads drowned 48-year-old Klaus-Peter Berwerd because he was gay. 1996, January 18th, a racist arson attack on an asylum seeker's hostel killed 10 people. February 15th, Sven Buter, a 23-year-old punk, was so badly beaten by a Nazi skinhead that he died of his injuries 5 days later. March 15th, Thomas Lemke, a member of the band Nazi FAP, gunned down Martin Kemming, a 26-year-old former fascist, for being a, quote, traitor, unquote. Kemming was Lemke's third murder victim. May 8th, a 43-year-old businessman, Bernd G., was beaten to death by three fascist youths. July 19th, a right-wing youth gang attacked and kicked to death Werner Weikum, a 44-year-old electrician at the local station. August 1st, Andreas Gutz, 34, was trampled to death by a fascist gang that included two women. October 23rd, Ahmed Bashir, 30, was stabbed to death after intervening to protect German friends under attack by racist skinheads. January 31st, a racist killed a Vietnamese refugee, Phan Van Tuward, 42, by hurling him onto a concrete floor. February 8th, a fascist youth kicked and knifed to death Frank Butcher, 17, an anti-fascist punk. February 13th, a young racist severely beat and drowned an Italian building worker, Antonio Milas, 37. February 23rd, Kai Diesner, a Nazi fanatic, shot police officer Stefan Grage dead. April 17th, two Nazis, Olaf Schmidke and Chris Denial, were murdered by a fellow Nazi after a stag party. April 22nd, Horst Gens, 50, was beaten and thrown into a trench before his fascist attackers returned to smash in his head with a 30-kilogram stone. May 8th, a gang of fascists battered to death Augustin Blotsky, 59, in his own home. May 23rd, 39-year-old Matthias S. was stabbed to death 4 days after he had called his killer a Nazi pig. May 27th, the killer of Matthias S. also murdered George K., 46. October 17th, pensioner Josef Anton Gira died 3 days after fascist skinheads bludgeoned him with pieces of iron piping. March 26th, Yana Georgi, 14, was murdered in broad daylight after calling her killer a fascio, unquote. July, a right-wing gang mercilessly beat Portuguese carpenter Nuno Lourenco in revenge for Germany's football defeat by Croatia. He died of his injuries 5 months later. Then in 1999, February 13th, Algerian refugee Omar Ben Nui, 28, was chased through the streets by a right-wing youth gang. In an attempt to escape, he jumped through a plate glass door and died of his injuries. March 17th, three right-wing extremist hooligans kicked to death pensioner Egon Efferts. August 9th, two local Nazi youths trampled a 44-year-old man to death. August 15th, Carlos Fernando, a 35-year-old Mozambican, was killed after a car parking row. October 6th, four Nazi skinheads tortured Kurt Schneider, 38, to death. November 1st, Martin Pyrrell, a 16-year-old weapons-crazed Nazi, ran amok, shooting his sister Daniela Pyrrell, 18, and three neighbors. and then in 2000. May 25th, four fascists battered to death 60-year-old Dieter Eich. May 31st, Falco Lüdke, 22, was pushed into the road by a local Nazi and was hit and killed by a taxi. June 14th, three Nazi skinheads kicked to death Alberto Adriano, a 39-year-old Mozambican contract worker in a local park. June 14th, three police officers, Thomas Goretzky, Yvonne Hochtemper, and Matthias von Vojtovitz, were shot dead by Nazi Michael Berger. June 24th, three local fascists, two of whom were women, cold-bloodedly beat to death Klaus-Dieter Gericke, a homeless man. July 9th, five right-wing extremists punched and kicked Jürgen S., a 52-year-old homeless man, so brutally that he died shortly afterwards from his injuries. July 27th, Norbert Ploth, aged 51 and homeless, was beaten to death by four young right-wing extremists who wanted to purge their town of tramps. That, again, a list of Nazi and right-wing killings in Germany since reunification. And moving over to Austria, there's an update on some of the goings-on with regard to the Freedom Party in Austria. That is part of the coalition government currently wielding power in that country, and it was founded originally as a vehicle for the political rehabilitation of Austrian Nazis under Hitler. The San Francisco Chronicle of Wednesday, November 22nd of the year 2000, had the following article by Peter Finn of the Washington Post, dateline Vienna: Austrian far-right party enmeshed in scandal, subtitled Police Officer's Book Alleges Smear Campaign Orchestrated by Haider. In English, Josef Kleindienst's surname means small service, but the work that Kleindienst and other Austrian police officers allegedly performed for Jörg Haider in his far-right Freedom Party has proven large enough to brew a major scandal. By many assessments, the uproar could threaten the political future of both Haider and the party whose inclusion in a coalition government here 9 months ago brought down the collective wrath of the European Union on Austria. In a book called I Confess, published last month, Kleindienst writes that for years the Freedom Party paid sympathetic police officers to illegally extract information from police computers, including raw intelligence, so the party could smear political enemies and score points on contentious public issues such as welfare, drugs, and crime. Quote, "We were asked to get information on a cross-section of people, politicians, artists, and criminals," said Kleindienst, 37, in an interview. "I saw this as a real threat to democracy," unquote. And remains to be seen what exactly this scandal does to the Freedom Party in Austria. I would note in that context that there are some similarities between that police spying scandal and one that took place in Los Angeles, in which members of an LAPD intelligence unit were gathering political intelligence on citizens for the Western Goals right-wing intelligence network. Some of that, a copy of that information was also being deposited in computer banks in Germany. That concludes For the Record program number 262, an update on Eurofascism. It's titled Dracula for President. It's being recorded on November 26th of the year 2000. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.